The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with John Gilroy of Lectromech, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio this morning, we have Andrew Hoppin, H-O-P-P-I-N, and he's the president of a company called New Civic, N-U-C-I-V-I-C. Good morning, Andrew. How are you?
Good morning. Really pleased to be here. Thanks for having me.
You know, some words are radio friendly, some aren't, and some may hear an M in there somewhere. But if you want to find more about this company, type in N as in Nancy, N-U-C-I-V-I-C. They've got what you call a slick website. It's a very well-designed website, simple, easy to use. You can download stuff. You can see demos and all kinds of things. Now, what kind of demos will you see? Well, I wanted Andrew to come in because I read a little story about his company being successful with open source in the federal government. I said, well, finally, something my listeners are interested in. And can they use open source to solve their problems? Can my federal IT professionals use open source to achieve their agency goals? And I want to bring Andrew in and pose the question to him and say, well, is that true, Andrew? Well, show me and maybe tell my listeners how they can get more information. But before we begin, please tell us about your background in every city in the United States. I mean, you bounce all over the place, east, west, up, down.
Sure. So I grew up in the Northeast, but I got myself into technology right here in Washington, D.C. I worked at NASA right after college and was doing satellite image processing work. First looking at it at Mars and later turning it down to look at urban growth on the Earth. And that just got me into technology. So I've been doing it ever since, although no longer with anything to do with space.
Very humble. I mean, you also went to Berkeley. You've wound up getting many awards. I mean, you've done a whole lot more than just a little job out of college, haven't you, Andrew?
I'm interested in a lot of things, so I do a lot of things. And yeah, my loves have always been public sector politics, campaigns, and making our government and governance work better, and then technology and entrepreneurship on the other hand, and then finally science and space and sort of the unknown way out there. And I bounced around between those three things pretty much my whole life.
And we have to include DEA Brazil. What the heck was that? I saw that in your profile.
That was an effort to take some of the tools and techniques that worked so well in Barack Obama's first presidential campaign and to bring them to Brazil. And we did some work down there in that era to try to bring open source tools, in fact, to help organize people around political campaigns down in Brazil.
No Rio de Janeiro, eh?
I'm a terrible Portuguese speaker. I'm a better Spanish speaker by far.
Oh, that's good. So, wide background. Here a few years ago, you started this company called New Civic. Well, when did you start it? Why did you start it? And what's the whole idea behind starting the company?
Sure. So, I was a chief information officer of the New York State Senate from 2009 to 2011. And we had a really fantastic and, for us, inspiring experience of how we could actually cut the IT budget of that legislature, open up a whole lot of information that had never seen the light of day before, and get a whole lot more New Yorkers involved in the work of making the laws that we all live under in New York. And we were so inspired by that experience that when we left, we decided, you know what, let's start a company to help other governments benefit from our lessons learned and some of the open source tools that we helped to work on while we did that.
New York State CIO of the Year as well. Let's not be too humble here. I mean, you must have done something successful to get that title, huh?
It's sort of the trifecta in a tough economic time, obviously, from 2009 to 2011 to get a lot more IT systems deployed, get a lot more New Yorkers involved, get a lot more information out, but also cut the budget.
It's almost like moving to New Orleans after Katrina. Okay, here he is. Andrew. Now what are you going to do? No money, no nothing.
I kind of like problems and tough situations because I feel like if you're going to have one life, you might as well do something that matters. And if you go to where things are easy, you're not going to as likely, in my view, to do something that really matters.
Well, guess what? My typical listener is a federal IT professional that's not going through good times.
Sure.
I mean, their staff's being reduced. They have these bozos like John Gilroy waltzing with smartphones and tablets and service pros. And how do you manage that? And, and oh, by the way, what about security? And there's no budget. And so perhaps that's why you looked around and stumbled on open source to solve some of your problems back in 09 and 10. Is that right?
Sure. Yeah. So I think, technology in general, we're very fortunate to, as IT professionals, to work in the realm of technology, because it is one of those few things that gets so much better as you go over time. You know, year over year, it becomes much more powerful and much less expensive, generally speaking. So if you're looking for a high leverage way to do more with less, looking at technology first, I think, is a great way to go. And then all the more so with open source, because in many cases, open source, you can kind of trade cash for skills and vice versa and actually be able to do a lot with less. And so, yeah, that is why we use open source exclusively in the New York State Senate and exclusively in our company, New Civic, because we think that when tax dollars are being spent, we should be spending them on building new things that are really innovative and really going to make a difference rather than rebuying the same thing.
I was working with a graphic artist yesterday, and she had the screen must have been 5 feet wide, and she had her Macintosh, of course, and she was running Parallels. Mm. And so I wrote down Parallels this morning. Well, Parallels, well, we know there's Unix and there's Linux, and Red Hat is a distribution of Linux. That's interesting. Now, what's the parallel here? Well, there's Drupal, and then there's distributions of Drupal. Mm-hmm. And so what your company represents is a distribution of an open source product called Drupal. Is that a good parallel, or is that
That's a very, very good parallel, as a matter of fact. We've recognized that open source is really powerful, right? Open source runs more of the web servers on the planet than any other operating system, for example. And yet open source has this reputation in some quarters for leaving you on your own to fend for yourself. And Red Hat is a great example of showing that you can actually provide really great enterprise-grade support for governments and for all industries, frankly, around an open source platform. We're trying to do the same thing with, as you said, Drupal, the content management system that runs a lot of websites in the world, especially federal websites in the U.S., and say, you know what, we can give you enterprise-grade support around it. And not only that, we can productize it for very specific use cases that you otherwise might have had to build something custom for or buy something off the shelf for that would have left you locked into a proprietary technology.
So is it true that the claim to fame for Drupal is Whitehouse.gov? Is that all Drupal?
So Whitehouse.gov made a big difference, and I'm super parochial about this, but we launched NYSenate.gov contemporaneous with Whitehouse.gov. And, you know, I think it's fair to say that if...
Well, let's go downtown and have a word with those fellas.
Well, here's the beautiful thing. So it's certainly fair to say that Whitehouse.gov at the time was the first place you'd expect something like that to be done, you know, using open source to build a really contemporary website that really struck a chord for a lot of folks. The New York State Senate, probably the last place anybody would have expected that. But we had this great dual story that we told at the big annual Drupal conference, DrupalCon in San Francisco in 2010, where Dave Cole from the White House and I co-keynoted it. And we said, you know what? Open source can make a difference everywhere. In the place where you have all this talent and all this worldwide recognition, the White House, as well as in the last place you'd expect it, you know, arguably a little bit of a backwater of state legislature in New York State. Doesn't really matter. You don't have to be in the White House in order to benefit from this.
Well, I've been using this new tool called Google, and I typed in New Civic, N-U-C-I-V-I-C, and I see it involved in the Department of Agriculture, but also New York State, also, wait a minute, San Luis Obispo, Puerto Rico, almost like your background, you know, throw a dart, and that's where you're in a lot of different places.
Yeah, so we're trying to do things that matter everywhere because we don't, you know, I'm a New Yorker and I'm an American and, you know, I certainly have my my political affiliations, but ultimately we really care about the world working better. And we think the government has a profound role to play in that. We think we all as community members and constituents and citizens have a role to play in that as well. So the technology that helps governments work better and engage citizens better is a worldwide use case. Every level of government, everywhere, all over the planet, can benefit from the kinds of things that we're helping to create and contributing to.
From Albuquerque to Argentina.
Exactly.
You are in Argentina, aren't you?
I have been in Argentina actually to do space work. I did research on meteor impacts in the, Las Pampas in the center of Argentina. So that was a lot of fun. And now I actually have done a lot of work informally with the government of Buenos Aires, which is known as one of the more innovative municipalities with open source in the world.
And one of the most beautiful cities ever. It's a fantastic place to be. Let's take a little break and come back. Kind of set the stage here. Okay, so we have a company here called New Civic. It's been very successful using open source software for not only state governments, but also federal governments. And you got a good story to tell. What's great. Let's take and I'll put myself in the role of a federal IT professional and say, okay, where should I apply this? What is it going to cost me? What about open source? What about security? And dive more into that, that my listeners are going, okay, maybe I might believe it. Tell me more. So let's take a break and talk a little bit more about that. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today's guest is Andrew Hoppen, president of New Civic. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio is Andrew Hoppen, president of a company called New Civic. In the first block, we kind of teed this discussion up, talked about open source software, talked about a content management system called DRUPAL Drupal. And now I got to ask the question here. You know, from the perspective of someone sitting over at Interior listening to this at 2 o'clock in the morning, what's a good candidate to move to Drupal, and what's a bad candidate, or where would it fit in for someone at Treasury or HHS? Where's it fit?
Yeah, great question. So Drupal is known as a content management system, so it runs a lot of websites. So if you're building a new website, particularly if you're using an older technology that's probably proprietary and not really empowering many people in the organization other than quite technical people to directly manage information, Drupal's a fantastic open source alternative to look at. And not only is it open source, meaning there's no license fee and you're not locked into any individual vendor, but you can get really expert enterprise grade support around it. There are big companies, there are small companies that will help you out with it. So we always encourage, when you're building any new website, folks to look at Drupal these days, as well as WordPress and other good open source content management systems. What we're doing at New Civic in particular is we're taking Drupal and saying it's not just for websites, it actually can build web applications. So if you wanted to build a parking permit application, or if you wanted to put up an open data portal that's going to publish a lot of data that your agency creates and manages, Drupal can do that as well, because the fact of the matter is that content management systems, which we think of as running websites, they really just are data management systems under the hood. They all have metadata associated with content. Who owns it, when it was published, what its latest revision is, who has permission to change it. All that stuff is already baked into Drupal. So we are productizing Drupal to do things like, hey, I want an open data catalog, and enabling open source Drupal to support that.
Drupal has 1 million members in their community, so you can get online and ask dumb questions, and they're going to go, no, there's no dumb question, there's just a question, and people are going to be at every level of expertise within that community to help. I'm going to quote a gentleman by the name of Andrew Hoppen. And he once said, you can never talk to us or pay us a dime. Get Drupal and good luck, whatever you want. I mean, you know, it gives you that amount of flexibility. So if you're a knowledgeable end user, you can use it as a data portal. Or if you're maybe not as knowledgeable, you can use you guys for odds and ends or any level in between.
Yeah, exactly right. So when we productize Drupal to, say, enable you to put up an open data portal with this open source software, it's a version of Drupal, or a distribution, as you said before, of Drupal called DKAN that we've created that lets you do that. And you're absolutely right. You don't ever have to talk to us. You can just download DKAN, the data management version of Drupal. You can manage it yourself. You never have to talk to us. You never have to pay us a dime. And in fact, we'll even help you out with it, because there's online community forums where you can ask questions, and we and other people around the world will help to answer those. It really is a global community that's building this with us. We're just the folks leading the DKAN project. On the other end of the spectrum, if you don't want to have to worry about technology at all, and maybe you don't even care that it's open source, we will deliver it to you as a cloud-hosted solution, fully supported, 24/7 service-level agreements. And there are many governments that, for legitimate reasons, want that level of white glove service and support, just so they can get up and running quickly and stay focused on their business lines and their mission. So I wanted this when I was a government CIO. I wanted the full freedom and autonomy of open source. I didn't want to ever be able to be locked into a vendor. On the other hand, I often wanted a vendor to take care of everything for me as long as I needed their help. And I wanted the freedom of choice to always change my mind. So we call that model OpenSaaS. It's the best of open source, brought together with the best of cloud or software as a service.
I was at a wedding over the weekend, and there were 350 people and three types of food. There's Mediterranean food, Indian food, and I think Mexican food. Because they said, hey, a lot of people like different things. You may want to get three plates. I saw some young men getting three plates of each one. And when I think of open source, I'm thinking open table, you know, kind of like this, I don't like this, rather than a fixed price menu where they say, well, this is what you're getting. And it may be good and it may be perfect, but it doesn't always fit every situation. And I tell you what, every agency you go in there, it's going to be it's completely different from the agency I was at yesterday, completely mm-hmm. different than I'm going to next week. So many different variations.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And so we're talking about, as I said before, something that really is globally relevant at every level of government. And of course, you're going to have an incredible diversity of types of needs and nuanced requirements and different capabilities, frankly, in terms of budget and talent in a range of governments that spans every level and every geography all over the world. So your software platforms to help governments work better have to be flexible. They have to be extensible. They have to be customizable. The problem is a business with building a one-off application and putting it on GitHub if it's open source or licensing it and selling it if it's proprietary is that you probably built it for one particular target market, one kind of customer, and you've designed it, every part of it, the software and the business model to accommodate. With open source, what we're able to do is we're able to put a stake in the ground and say, hey, we think this is the center of the bell curve. A lot of people want this, but we still provide the freedom and the flexibility for people that have a slightly different set of needs to get something that really is, at the end of the day, tuned to their needs. And both our business model and the technology platforms can enable that kind of diversity.
I was at your website, and you can pick up your phone and go over to nucivic.com. And I was looking for social media shares. I saw the usual suspects, and I saw GitHub. So you're plugged into GitHub. This is one of the few companies I've seen that you would expect, you know, LinkedIn. It wasn't LinkedIn. It was GitHub. So that's the kind of relationship you have with that community.
Exactly right. So if you're an open source company and an engineering-centric open source company as we are, GitHub is your currency. If you are not contributing code there in the open for other engineers and other companies and, frankly, your customers to look at, to evaluate directly the quality of your work and see if you're open to their input and contributions on your work, then you're not going to have a lot of credibility as an open source company. So it's fundamental to us. And we're pretty proud, frankly, that we put up the first ever government GitHub repository back in 2009. The New York State Senate was one of our claims to fame. And we did it not just because we wanted to do something that we thought would be cool, but also, frankly, because it was super useful. It enabled other governments, including the White House at the time, to find out what we were doing, find out about us, and get in touch.
Reuse the stuff.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
That should be the motto, I think. It's reuse the stuff. I mean, why should you hire a software developer to come up with code that someone did in Minnesota? I don't know. Maybe New Orleans. Who knows?
Yeah, and you never know where innovation is going to come from. You know, a lot of people would expect it from whitehouse.gov. Very few people would have expected it from nysenate.gov. But when it's all out in the open, you enable that those thousand flowers to bloom and to find the ones that are really beautiful. You know, innovation really can come from anywhere. You need the openness to find that and enable it to bubble up from anywhere. GitHub is a great tool for doing that, and open source is fundamental to making that even possible. If it all had to go through one company or one place where you would expect it, then you're not going to get as much innovation.
It may be limited, and it may be a limited menu, to back to the food thing, and maybe you don't want a limited menu. Yeah. I don't know if you've ever read David Linthicum on InfoWorld. He's written 13 books. Mm-hmm. So one of his last books was on service-oriented architecture, SOA. All of a sudden, that transitioned to software as a service, then a transition to platform as a service, and another parallel called infrastructure as a service. So is your offering open source as a service? Is that the construct?
It really is. Or, you know, sometimes we've distilled it down just to open as a service, frankly.
Open as a service. Yeah. It's like 7-Eleven,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. And Open SaaS is a acronym that we've been helping to socialize. We didn't coin it. It was coined by Dries Buitart, the founder of the Drupal project, back in 2009, I think. But anyway, it does refer to the best of open source combined with software as a service. And so these are two, I think, juggernaut trends in government IT. A lot of governments are now not only putting open source on a level playing field for procurement, but even preferring it. And thinking of the governments of the United Kingdom, Brazil, New Hampshire, among others, they really see that they don't want to be locked into a vendor or proprietary technology. So open source is a real juggernaut. On the other hand, software as a service is also a juggernaut because, frankly, it drives huge efficiencies. So Salesforce.com is one of the seminal examples, right? You get up and running quickly, you get everything managed for you, and you don't have any technology burden is the idea. Unfortunately, though, software as a service can have downsides because not only are you locked into often proprietary technology, you're locked into proprietary infrastructure where that technology is hosted. You may not even be able to put it in your own data center if you want to for reasons that may matter. So you bring those two together, however, open source, but also available as an enterprise-grade supported software as a service, and we think it's your cake and eat it too scenario as a government technology buyer.
I was in the lobby before this interview, and I met the chief security officer for a little group called the NSA. And I would imagine she might have different security requirements than maybe agriculture or interior or the folks I know at HHS. I mean, my guess is the intelligence community may look at it from a different perspective. Still want that flexibility, though, mm-hmm. because look at their world. I mean, their plate is just ever-changing, but it has to be within a very controlled and disciplined environment. Maybe this is something they should look at. It seems to be I can't even talk about what's being done in the intelligence community, but I would think that this might be something loose and flexible, widely changing, something that's adaptable, something that is secure as well. Let's take a break. We can come back, talk more about maybe comparing this to products like WordPress and talking about other distributions. I read about a distribution called Socrata, which kind of funny. I don't know what that means, but that's another distribution. We'll ask you about that. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Andrew Hoppen, President, New Civic. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Andrew Hoppen, President of a company called New Civic, N-U-C-I-V-I-C. If you look up his profile on LinkedIn, he's been everywhere, done everything, and has got a strong, strong background in helping agencies solve problems using open source, and that's what his company does. It has two products. One's called New Civic Data. One's called New Civic Apps. And I'm going to toss to you, and maybe you can tell me the difference, please.
Sure. So New Civic Data is our hosted and supported, or open SaaS, as we say, version of DCAN. And DCAN is the data management distribution of Drupal. So if you're an agency and you want to put up an open data catalog, or you want to put up another website that is intended to create, manage, and share data, DCAN is a great open source tool to look at. And if you want our help with it and want us to host it and support it for you, you can purchase a subscription to New Civic Data.
So the nomenclature here is K, K-A-N, and so you'd prefix C-CAN or D-CAN for the distribution. Is that how the logic works there?
Yeah, exactly. So not to get too wonky here, but C-CAN is a fantastic open source product based on Python, and it inspired us to create D-CAN, which is a fantastic open source product based on Drupal. So different language, same use case, the difference being that Drupal also has a full-featured content management system under the hood, so you can tell data stories, you can build communities of practice around data, whereas in many cases, if you're using CCAN, they choose to integrate that with Drupal or WordPress, which is a fine way to go, but we just think we make it a little bit simpler with DCAN.
And it depends on the application. My daughter's a civil engineer. She's learning Python because, Dad, it's important to learn Python. Well, not in my world. Well, Dad, you're a weirdo. In the engineering world, apparently Python's very popular, and that's what engineers learn for many different reasons that I can't fathom. But it's so many different types of things out there. So many of my listeners read blogs. Is there a blog you read that maybe they can learn about Drupal, about this type of software?
Sure. So there are a whole lot. And one of my favorites, which is a little bit selfish because we also do some work with them, is Luke Fretwell's GovFresh. GovFresh.com. I also like FierceGov. And frankly, the rest I find people tend to send to me, and they're a little bit all over the map. They're often Medium posts these days. I find a lot of thoughtful people posting on Medium. And they're not so much their personal sort of blog brand as much as they are somebody just doing once in a while a really deep, thoughtful piece. And I read those because I almost always learn something new that I feel like deepens my ability to do my job better.
And that's what we see in marketing is longer blog posts are trending. It used to be 300 words and 600 words. Longer blog posts are trending more because people actually want meat and potatoes. No. Give me. I want to get at least 2,000 words worth of depth in here. This is a podcast, by the way. You can go to Apple and type in Federal Tech Talk. You can Google Federal Tech Talk, and you'll stumble on this, and you can subscribe and listen, I guess, when you go. No, podcasts are supposed to be as much time as it takes to go to the gym or drive in work. So in D.C., an hour-long podcast is a drive, and in other parts of the country, it's maybe a workout. So that's the rules for podcasts. So open source as a service. So what about security? I mean, this is a question people say, oh, I don't know about security and open source. I'm kind of scared. I've read some stuff, and hey, I want to stick with my old man software that I've used for 30 years here.
Yeah, so very common question and an important one, obviously. Open source has historically had a red herring thrown at it, in my view, which is that, oh, it's not secure because there's not a company behind it. Well, the reality is there are companies behind it. You mentioned Red Hat, which is one of the companies behind Linux. You know, IBM has been a huge contributor to open source for a long time. It really is red herring to say that there isn't, you know, serious corporate support behind open source. And in fact, we find that open source is more secure. And the reason for that is because there's not just one company looking at software and fixing problems. And you can look under the hood and see what's there. Instead, you've got tens of thousands, in the case of Drupal, contributing engineers looking at the software every day, finding security issues where they may exist and fixing them proactively. And for you mentioned security agencies before, security agencies and DOD and Pentagon have actually been one of the biggest users of open source, and in the case of the Navy, contributors to Drupal in particular. And one of the reasons they like it is because they can own it, literally. They can put it in their data center, they can change the code, they can look under the hood. There's no black box to open source.
Just like the woman in the lobby I talked to earlier today, NSA may have things that they don't want others to know they're patching or not patching, or certain distributions they use or they don't use. And so you partner with this company called Akoya. People may confuse you and Akoya. Maybe you can differentiate yourselves here. What do you do? What do they do?
Sure. So Akoya is a great company started by Dries Buitart, the founder of Drupal. And so they specialize in Drupal hosting and Drupal support. And we specialize in tuning Drupal to do very specific things like put up an open data catalog. And so it's a great partnership. We provide product and subject matter expertise in specific civic use cases. Akoya provides enterprise infrastructure, 24/7 service level agreements, rigorous security protocols, and all those good things. So it's a great partnership. And I think it's indicative of the way that the open source community works. We're not all competitors. We both compete and we collaborate. And together, we can be stronger and do more faster. And a lot of us are mission-driven. We really want our software to make a difference and make the world a better place.
I signed a contract this week with a company called Libsyn, which is a media hosting company. And the reason I went with them is because, you know, they don't do what I do, and they don't care. They just want to be dynamic and scalable and help people and make sure things are up. And I don't want to spend my time doing that. Should I have software developers worrying all weekend long if something's up? What about scaling? What about No, I don't want to go to a gas station and try to make sure if this gas is going to work or not. I want to just plug in the beaten gas and go. So I think that's the value of something like. So where does Carahsoft fit into the distribution for you, or are they one of your partners?
Yeah, so Carahsoft is, I'd say, the third leg of the stool for what we're doing at the federal level with New Civic Data. We have our company, New Civic, which is providing the data management subject matter expertise and building and curating the DKN distribution of Drupal and interacting with direct customers that want to do better data management, data publishing at the federal level. We have Akoya providing enterprise-grade hosting and security and support 24/7. And we have Carahsoft making it easy for government customers to buy. Frankly, it's as many of us wish it were otherwise, but the fact is it's very hard to work with on a business level with federal government. There's a lot of paperwork to go through, a lot of details that you really have to be expert to navigate well. Carahsoft's really good at it, and they help us worry about making great software and supporting our customers, not worrying about being procurement experts.
When I think about security, I think of this funny phrase called FISMA. And then it dawned on me, I mean, you're not going to be deployed in the federal government unless you're FISMA compliant. I mean, come on now. I mean, do you think the people at agriculture are naive? I mean, someone's going to get fired if they bring in Drupal open. No, it's FISMA compliant, isn't it?
Yeah, so we and Akoya have done a huge amount of work to build compliant software, both FISMA and now FedRAMP. There's a very active FedRAMP certification process going on. And that is an area where we absolutely need to develop great deep expertise. And whether you're a proprietary software company, cloud company, or an open source company, it's a really critical thing. We put a lot of time into it. Our system security plans are hundreds of pages long, and we take it very seriously.
If you keep up with what Google's doing, and I don't know who can, maybe if you study 18 hours a day, you'll have a hint of what they're doing. They are starting to imply that they're going to deprecate sites that aren't responsive. Mm. And they're not stating it. And Matt Cutts over there is not making any proclamations and standing on the town square. But it looks like they're deprecating sites that are not responsive. Where does Drupal fit in all this whole display issue?
So almost every contemporary Drupal site built in the last couple of years is responsive. There are a whole variety of what we call responsive themes that out of the box help a Drupal developer to build a responsive site. And all DKN websites are responsive by default. And frankly, we don't even give it a second thought. It's just the way you need to do things in order to be able to build a site that's accessible to a lot of people. So there's accessibility in the sense of Section 508 compliance for people with who need to use screen readers and what have you. But mobile accessibility is just as important in terms of being able to get people information when and where they need it, no matter what device they're using.
Because I'm a radio guy, I got to say it's DK, as in Kathy, not Kathy, as in Kevin, DKAN. If you're listening to this and there's snow on the ground and you're typing DKAN, no, there's no DC, a DKAN, contrasted with C as in Charlie, KAN, and contrasted with Socrata. So what's Socrata?
Socrata is a fantastic company and open data catalog software application, and it's a proprietary software as a service. So don't have a darn thing to say bad about them. They're fantastic, and they've built a lot of great data catalogs for a lot of governments, and they're one of the pioneers in making open data really a thing in throughout governments these days. So give them a lot of credit for that. That said, when I was a government CIO, I didn't buy Socrata, even though we talked about it, because I was concerned about putting my data into a proprietary cloud, which I didn't have any control over and was software that I feared that I would be locked into. So I always preferred the open source route when I was inside government as a buyer. And now I don't even have to have a compromise in terms of how easy it is to get the service and support and cloud hosting that I want for that open source software.
That's great, because I'm sure people who are listening to this interview are going to start a spreadsheet. I sure would. And I make a list of companies and what I need, what I don't need, and come up with a spreadsheet. So now we have a good start of a spreadsheet. Let's take a little break and come back. Talk more about where you fit in the federal government and more of your personal technical choices and where Drupal's heading in the next 5 years. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Andrew Hoppen, president, New Civic. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Andrew Hoppen, president of NU New Civic. If you play around on Twitter, you might want to follow his company, GETNUCIVIC, Get New Civic. That's the handle. And find out what's going on and get product announcements and see where he's speaking. I imagine you speak at conferences throughout the year. Is that right? You talked about earlier. Anything coming up the next 6 months?
Great question. I just finished one yesterday. Two days ago, run by the Omidyar Network in New York City, called The Business of Civic Tech. So civic tech is a whole movement now. We've got all these companies that are building businesses to help governments and communities work better. And we like to think we're part of that movement. And they had a whole conference about it where I gave a talk.
Many times people give me feedback in the show and they go, well, you had that security guy on. What kind of smartphones do you have? And so I came up with this very scientific 10-question test. And because you do have 2 degrees in science, I can claim to be scientific. So I'm going to ask these questions. We're going to find out if, in fact, Andrew, you are a card-carrying nerd. First question is, do you have an Instagram account?
I use the company's Instagram accounts, and I do not have a personal Instagram account.
And how many cell phones have you bought in the last year for yourself?
I've only bought one.
You know what?
I'm in the very late end of the early adopter curve on most things.
You're not getting many nerd points. And do you have a personal Twitter feed?
I do, at A Hoppin, A-H-O-P-P-I-N.
And what do you prefer, Meerkat or Periscope?
Meerkat.
Okay. What kind of smartphone do you have?
iPhone 6.
What's the most popular app in that that bad boy there in the last 30 days?
That is a great question. Probably Twitter, which maybe not be very interesting. And I hate to say it, but also our expense submission and reimbursement app for our company.
Pretty boring. So you break into your house, how many tablets do we find in your house?
Just one iPad.
You're sinking fast. You better pull out of this one. What was your most recent post on the social networking site?
I posted on the a Minneapolis newspaper site defending a company whose software allegedly hadn't done a good job for the government there and saying, you know what, this is actually more complicated than it sounds.
And do you have a mobile fitness device on your person, your shoe, buried in your shoulder?
I don't. I play a lot of soccer, a little bit of squash, and I was a little disappointed that they rolled back some of the health features in the iWatch because I do plan to get one, again, as the late adopter on the early adopter curve, probably in a few weeks.
Last book you read was electronic or paper?
Last book I read was electronic.
Well, this is a mixed bag here. I'm going to have to go to my Apple IIe, perhaps my Radio Shack TRS-80, and go through this carefully and find out if you're a card-carrying nerd. But I don't.
I preferred
think
the Apple IIc because it was more portable.
We know that. Also had color, didn't it? That's interesting. It's fascinating. The most popular part of the show is the people's personal technical preferences. So people listening going, there's a security guy with an Android phone. Why would he do that? So crystal ball time. I'm not going to ask you about the Red Sox. I'm not going to ask you about the Redskins. I'm going to ask you about the future of Drupal. Do you think it's going to be around in 5 years? Is it going to blossom? Is it going to just hold its own? Are they going to go from 1 million members of the Drupal community to 10 million? Or where's it heading?
I'm a little bit biased, obviously, but I think it's incredibly looking good for the future of Drupal. And the reason that I say that is not just my bias. It's also that for more than 10 years, Drupal has been come for the code, stay for the community. So yeah, the code is great. Yeah, the code runs a lot of the biggest websites in the world, including whitehouse.gov. But what's really special about it is this community of, as you said, a million people, give or take, and you know, literally 30,000 engineers that contribute code on a monthly basis. And that means that whatever is the most important thing to be doing with the code, with the technology in 5 years, that community will be applying its efforts to. And that's really the ultimate sustainability, is the human beings behind it that are constantly innovating and constantly changing and constantly keeping up with the world.
So where does one, you know, you can go to school and take basic courses in project management. Can you take a basic course in Drupal, or how do you learn it? Is this all kind of figured out on your own, or are there online courses?
All the above. So certainly you can go to the traditional online learning outlets such as lynda.com. There are also some great books, electronic and otherwise, that you can get on Amazon or anywhere else. I'm particularly fond of a site called Drupalize.me, Drupalize.me, and that's a library of Drupal training videos built by some of the most leading lights of the Drupal community, and very cheap, something like $50 a month to get to all subscribe to all the videos.
And I just want to bounce around. We've talked about different distributions and cataloging and publishing and visualization. Well, maybe you can define this term cataloging for our listeners. So, you know, it means many different things to many people. Where does it fit in with the DKAN distribution here?
Sure. So data cataloging is an idea that you should know what data you got, and you should be able to search across it, and you should be able to share it, and it should be easy to find or discoverable, as we say, both for human beings and machines. So data catalog, having a data catalog like data.gov at the federal level, is part of a federal mandate called U.S. Project Open Data. And every agency has to publish open data and catalog its data and share it up with data.gov. And this has become a global movement at all levels of government. It's really becoming de rigueur for governments to open up their data. And the primary way to do that is a data catalog.
So tell me about visualization. And there's a real popular product in town you probably know. It's called Tableau. It's just everyone's talking about it. I was having coffee the other day, and the guy two tables over was talking about Tableau. It just seems to be, it's everywhere. Does it fit in with your product? Does it compare? Is it good or bad? Where does it fit in with your product?
Absolutely. So we integrate with Tableau. We integrate with Esri. We integrate with a lot of leading tools for, you know, visualizing data and analyzing data. And the reason for that is that what DKAN is good at, it's good at helping you manage the data. It's good at helping you aggregate it from wherever you got it, from your network drives, from your email attachments, your spreadsheets, and putting it into one place where it's easy for human beings to manage it, find it, and share it. But then you want to do things with the data. You want to visualize it. You want to understand it. You want to get an insight out of it. You want to analyze it. And in some cases, we have good tools to do that are built natively into DKAN. In other cases, the best fit is a third-party tool that's very specialized, like, say, Tableau for data visualization. So what we do with DKAN is we provide a really good, easy toolkit to integrate with all the leading third-party data visualization tools, such as Tableau.
So you choose your news. Maybe the data visualization built in is good enough. Maybe you have to go, and I'll tell you what, 10 different use cases, 10 answers, and there's no one answer. There's no one size fits all with data visualization. If there's anything I've learned is that good luck. You really have to have the skill set is almost artistic. The skill set is analytical and artistic, and maybe not even, maybe the best person is not a data person, you know? I mean, isn't it funny how, now let's sit and ask the right question before we spend 10 hours with your statisticians over there. And it's very difficult to actually do visualization well, I think.
Yep.
We just got a couple minutes here. Federal Computer Week named you one of the hot companies to watch in the federal government. So did you slip someone a $20 bill over there? Why'd you get that little award?
Honestly, I still to this day have no idea how that happened, other than that we, you know a lot of folks in the federal government, and so perhaps some civil servants said nice things about us here in D.C. We're based in New York, so we don't know the Beltway buzz that often, but we do have a lot of friends in the government community here in D.C., largely through the Drupal community, frankly. There's a very vibrant Drupal for Gov community that we consider ourselves to be parts of and peers of. And even those of us way up in New York are really grateful for the health of that community down here in D.C. So I have no idea. Frankly, I don't think we're very tactical or proactive about self-promotion, but it seems to happen once in a while because we think we're doing good work.
Well, I think that's the best kind of referral is that, you know, people all around town are talking about John Gilroy's Pizza, and they wind up at John Gilroy's Pizza. I mean, people around town are talking about, well, no, these folks are at New Civic. How do you spell that? Oh, it's N-U. Oh, it's N-U Civic. What do they do? Well, they help you with Drupal. Well, what can they do? Well, they have different products. And, you know, I think this quote of never talk to us or pay us a dime, maybe you should have a T-shirt that says that, because that's really what people want. They want to be able to maybe test drive something and fail early, fail off, and make mistakes. And then and only then would they, maybe put my little toe in the water and get a hold of this Andrew guy or one of your engineers and start asking some questions. And I didn't realize that many sites out there for training. I'm getting more and more involved in online training, and I almost think this is almost a perfect fit for online training, because there are people all over the world with this type of a skill set in governments that need to be trained, and they're not going to get in a plane and fly halfway across the world. They want to do online training for this type of software, which you have to include a lab in. Kind of difficult pull. Have you done any online training for this?
So we are just starting to do that. We always do webinars for our customers one-on-one, but we're starting to develop curriculum that can be made accessible to hundreds or thousands of people at a time. And one of the reasons that we're doing that is because we're actually part of a larger company as of late last year, GovDelivery, which a lot of governments will know. And one of our other subsidiary companies there is GovLoop, which has just launched an online training line of business. And
it makes sense.
So I've been super inspired about what they do and how they do it and how effective it is. So we're taking a cue from our sister, brother, partner there, and learning how to do it ourselves. And we may, in fact, use their technology to help do it.
It would make perfect sense because many people, suppose you're a colonel stuck in an Air Force base in Montana and you want to learn this, you can't afford to fly into D.C. for a class, but online training gives you that flexibility. You can still be home with your wife and kids and maybe do it in the evenings or something. So it fits in with a lot of the aspects here of what I see more and more govies trying to be more productive and working weekends to try to be more productive as well. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gill right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio today was Andrew Hoppen, president of a company called New Civic, NUCIVIC. Thanks, Andrew.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 9, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.